this episode,
a story about business lessons, and sometimes you can get away cheaply with lessons, sometimes not. Barings Bank opened a Singapore office called Barings Futures Singapore so they could trade on the Singapore Stock Exchange, and he made a killing, the Barings Golden Boy. A doubling strategy. If he lost, you know, £1 million, he'd gamble £2 million, and the losses continue. And it all unraveled in January, 1995.
Welcome to Anecdotally Speaking, a podcast to help you build your business story repertoire. Hi, everybody. I'm Sean Callahan.
And hey, everybody. I'm Mark Shank.
And as our regular listeners will no doubt have detected, we've had a pretty slow start to the year in terms of podcast episodes, and partly because Sean's been in Kenya doing some work with clients over there and had some pretty good experiences. Sean, so what were some of the highlights?
Yeah, no, look, Kenya was amazing. I can see why people fall in love with Africa. It's just a remarkable place. But, you know, the thing that sticks in my mind is probably something that not on most people's, I know, itinerary, but I, on the end of the week, Gerald, who was taking me around and showing me Nairobi, said, "Hey, Sean, do you want to see the largest slum in Africa?" And I thought, "Oh, that could be interesting." So we went off. He had a friend who lived there, and his friend took me around. I guess the thing that was really struck me was the industry that was happening in that community, right? Like, it was, everyone was busy doing something. There were people carting water, there were people washing hair, there were people cleaning clothes. It just showed, I think the thing that took away from it is to show humans just have this innate desire to keep busy and do stuff and get the job done, I suppose. And everyone was really super friendly, you know, as I was going, people were just asking me questions and wondering where I was from. And it was a really great experience, I have to say, and, you know, and totally different to anything I've ever seen, you know, in terms of, you know, the housing construction, for example, et cetera, et cetera. Right. Yeah. So that stood out for me.
Did you feel like totally out of place?
Oh yes. Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, it was very different to everyone else was there, but no one made me feel unwelcome though.
Like, right. That's where I was going with it.
Yeah.
Like, did you feel like people looking at you going, "Get the hell out of my song"?
No, not at all. In fact, the opposite. It was like smiles and jokes and, you know, you'd be in this tiny little laneway, you know, about as wide as your shoulders, and you would turn a corner, you'd be walking right between some women washing clothes, and you think, hey, maybe you're impinging on them in some way, but it wasn't like that. It was like, you know, like, what, you know, sort of, yeah, everyone spoke English, and so, you know, it was sort of a very friendly interchanges. So it was great. Anyway, so that really stood out for me. I mean, I had lots of fun with my customer over there. You know, so we were helping about 100 leaders more or less tell the story of the strategy for all their business units. So that was very interesting. But it was definitely, you know, at one end of the spectrum, a 5-star sort of experience. And then, you know, going to seeing something like that, it was, I suppose it was the contrast as well.
Contrast. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool.
Now, I believe you've got you're kicking off the year with the story, Mark. So
my turn in the saddle.
Yep.
All right. And this is a story about business lessons. And sometimes you can get away cheaply with lessons, sometimes not. Now, Barings Bank, it's in the 1990s, it was the UK's oldest investment bank and arguably the oldest investment bank in the world. Definitely not the biggest, but one of the most respected. To the extent that the Queen, Queen Elizabeth, apparently had a fair bit of money invested with Barings. So in 1992, Barings opened a Singapore office called Barings Futures Singapore so they could trade on the Singapore Stock Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And they picked a young guy, a 28-year-old English guy called Nick Leeson, to run the trading operations.
Wow.
So, 28 years old.
That's pretty young, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, he'd been at Barings for 3 years and he'd been in the back office to start with. And then he made it onto the trading floor as an assistant and eventually started doing some trading. And he made a killing.
Right.
Like he made, now they were, he made some highly speculative trades that paid off hugely. And he gained this reputation as a trading genius.
Right.
And so he was like the Barings golden boy. And so they sent him to Singapore to head up the front and back office for the trading operations in Singapore. And that was 1992, right?
Mm.
So in that first year, 1992, he made a profit of 10 million pounds, which is pretty darn good, right?
It was a tidy sum.
That was 10% of Barings' total profits for that year. He had a £50,000 salary and he got a £130,000 bonus. Not a bad first year. However, his strategy was very high risk trades and they started to go bad, you know, as they do. And so he started racking up significant losses. He had a strategy that that gamblers adopt, a doubling strategy. If he lost, you know, £1 million, he'd gamble 2 million. Anyway, started to go wrong. But because Barings, he was the golden boy and they trusted him, they gave him the responsibility of double checking his own trades, right? Rather than reporting him to some superior, Leeson was able to double check his own trades. And what he did was one of his staff made an error. She was given instruction to sell a position and she bought instead, or maybe bought, anyway, and made a £20,000 loss on that. And so rather than report it, Leeson hid it in this obscure error account. And he say realized that he could do that. And so he kept trading and making losses and he kept hiding them in this concealed account. It's not a secret account. It's just obscure,
right?
And unless you really know what you're doing, you wouldn't look in this account. And because things were going bad and he's using investor money, he doesn't have any more investor money. So he starts using the bank's money, which he's not allowed to do, to make these trades, and the losses continue. At the end of 1992, there was $2 million in losses hidden in this account. In 1993, by the end of 93, it had increased tenfold. There was £23 million hidden in the account. At the end of 1994, there was £200 million hidden in that account.
Is that right?
Losses.
Wow.
Now, he knew that as soon as anybody, as soon as anybody did anything more than a cursory glance, he was done like a dinner.
Yeah.
And he kept concocting these increasingly complex explanations to explain what was happening and asking for more money. Right. But of course he dug an enormous hole, not just for himself, but for Barings. And it all unraveled in January, 1995. And he made a really bad, took a relatively safe position on the Japanese stock market, but there was a big earthquake in Japan and the Japanese stock market crashed and that. So over the next couple of weeks, he went on this frenzy of trading, trying to recover. And he kept digging and digging and digging. And by the time he'd finished, there was £827 million of debt that he'd racked up, losses that he'd racked up.
Yeah.
And a couple of days later, he just left a note saying, sorry. Oh, no. And the note said, I'm sorry. And he bought cash tickets, flights from his wife out of Singapore to Thailand. And 3 days later, on the 26th of February, Barings, one of the world's oldest and most respected investment banks, went bankrupt. Gone. And now Leeson, he was basically on the run for 9 months. He was captured in Germany 9 months later, extradited to Singapore, and charged, convicted, and sentenced to 6.5 years in prison. Which he served, and he wrote a book.
I bet he
became a movie. Yeah. Anyway, just this was a massive error that caused the downfall. And but simple. It was a simple thing, right? It was a totally simple thing that led to the downfall of a bank.
Yeah, well, so, allowing someone to check their own working, it doesn't seem to be a great strategy, does it?
Well, that's something that is strongly recommended you not do.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. I've seen people come a cropper from that.
Many times. I mean, that's how things go wrong.
The thing that really surprised me, like I thought I knew at the very high level that story, but I didn't realize it took that long. I thought there was just like, I had in my head, it was just this one trade and bam, it was gone. But I suppose it's hard to lose that much money in one trade, but
yeah,
it's interesting too, that back then, essentially $1 billion was enough to put a company under, when you have companies that are worth $3 trillion now and stuff like that, it is a big difference, isn't it? From the 90s to now.
One of the things though is it's cash flow, right? He had exposed them to a position where they had to stump up the money, and they just didn't have it.
Didn't have money, yeah.
No. Wow. So it was in US dollars. It was $1.4 billion,
right?
And they had about $700 million as their total trading capital.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
So,
ouch.
So anyway,
okay.
One man.
Fantastic, nice one. Okay, so let's go through what we do, and that is we first of all talk about what we liked in the story, right? What did you like telling in the story?
All right, well, there was a couple of details that I thought were particularly interesting. One of them was that the Queen had invested in Barings, right?
Yeah, right.
Because
that
talks to the credibility of the bank.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is not a bank that takes risks, right? This is the monarch's money.
Yes, yes. So, you think that would be, has a certain reputation, right? So you get that in a very short period of time. Yeah, I love that. I like the getaway cash tickets to Thailand. I can sort of imagine him sort of quickly organizing that and trying to get away. I did wonder why you go to Germany, though. You think of all the places, that would be a place where they'd nab you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You think you'd stay in countries which you don't have extradition treaties for.
Yeah. Yeah. He was in Thailand, Malaysia, Australia, and then I think Germany. So he was kind of moving
around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like the fact that, for me anyway, the name Baring Bank is something I recognize. And so I immediately sort of can sort of see that. And also, just starting off how lessons can cost you a lot. And I think that was a nice, sort of relevant statement up the front that really helped me understand what this story was going to be about. So that,
yeah,
really
without
liked,
giving
I
it
really
away.
Like that. Without giving it away. Yeah. Without giving too much away.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I guess, like if people who are familiar with the Barings Bank story, the collapse, they would know that it's going to be about the collapse.
Yeah. And I'm not totally against the idea of giving it away, actually, in a story. I remember watching, I'm now going to have a blank on the comedian. There's a comedian, Australian comedian. She did a big not TED talk, but a Netflix special that was super popular. But she did.
Hannah Gadsby.
Thank you. Hannah Gadsby. But she did a show after that big one where in the first, 10 minutes of a show, she actually gave away all her big stories, right? And she said, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you a story about this and it has this point. And then I'm going to tell you this story and it has this point. And then she went and told those stories. And it was so interesting, the impact it had on you, because as she was telling the stories, you knew what was going to happen. And when it happened, you went, yeah, I know. That's what's supposed to happen. It actually gave you a feeling of like you're in the know, right? I thought that was kind of interesting in terms of storytelling. Anyway, she's got some good tricks up her sleeve, that's for sure. Is there anything in that story that you would like to tweak or what would you do to make it an even better story, do you think?
Yeah, I did a lot of pairing to get to.
Oh, did you? Yeah, you're cutting it. You were looking at the whole book or something, were you, to start with?
Oh, I did start to read his book, but it just seemed to be a bit of, you know, like there's some interesting things that I didn't say. Like he denied that he ever did it for personal gain.
Right.
And yeah, okay, that's all right. But investigators in 1996 found a bunch of accounts that had $35 million stashed away in them. So,
okay, right.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, that bit of
depends how much you mean by personal gain. Oh, $35 million worth. Oh,
you mean that's Yeah. So, yeah, there was a lot that so look, I'm reasonably happy with what that got down to.
Yeah, the thing that, you know, I wonder is whether it could be made more visual in some way. Because, you know, I could sort of, I had a vague picture, like, you know, what, you know, yeah, it's like, how would we make that even more visual as a story?
Well, okay. And that, look, so with that question asked, I could have easily explained that. So he fled on the 23rd of February.
Yeah.
After spending the day on the trading floor. And it was one of the craziest days on the Singapore trading floor.
Yeah.
And people were, like, it was just all the yelling and blah, blah, blah. And he was trading all day, you know, just going crazy. And at the end of it, people were going, oh, my, you know, patting on the back, going, the volume of trades you got through today, man, that's incredible. Like, so could have added that.
Yeah, that's right. See that, you know, and or, you know, even sort of saying, it just reminded me of that scene out of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know, where they're down on the Chicago trading floor, you know, and you know, so sort of it was a bit like that, you know, all hands flying around, people yelling across the room. Mind you, the trading floors are not like that at all these days because of electronic trading. I don't think there's much noise at all. So anyway, that'd be only one thing I would imagine would make an even better story. I'm just wondering, in terms of, you know, sort of making a point to tell that story. I mean, is there a the thing that really jumped out for me is this is to do with you know, the double checking. You know, just you know, you just what do you call that, governance, right? It's a sort of
governance
issue, right? And that could be a good business point for this story. Right.
Yep.
He was a young fellow who, you know, sort of showed an amazing talent for some period of time, but was not given any governance, that they could govern themselves. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. For me, it's great. Trust is great, right? And they've trusted this guy to do the right thing, but no one held him accountable. And so,
yeah,
what they did not have the equation right. There was high trust, but low accountability.
So
having that balance is absolutely essential.
Yeah. You know, the other story that sprung to mind as you were telling it is the Sam Bankman-Fried trading scandal as well. So, and again, there was no accountability to the point where he was just using his customers' money to do trades, right?
Yep.
So,
So who checks the checker?
Yeah. So apart from, you know, the accountability point, is there any other points that you'd apply that story to?
Just be aware that the cult of personality.
Yeah. And, you know, especially in that sort of space of trading, just because you have a run of success doesn't mean you're going to be successful all the time. I mean, that's a real fallacy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And extending that point a little bit, the difference between talent and luck. And yeah, he got lucky a few times and people assumed he had talent.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's a big assumption to make.
Yeah.
I think it's a good one. It's a good one to put in the back pocket. But we should you're gonna add to that.
Just the importance of people look at governance structures and they go, what a waste. This gets in the way of me doing my job. All of, you know, these checks and, you know, reports I have to fill out and, you know, it just gets in the way of doing my job. And I get that. but there's a reason for it. And this is a salutary lesson in why those structures are essential.
Yeah.
Right. Even in a tiny business. I mean, the number of small businesses where one partner is responsible for all the finances, and then, you know, over time people, you know, it's found out that he's been socking it away. And
are you trying to tell me something in this in a subtle way or anything like that?
Did I mention my Swiss accounts?
Yeah. No, that's good. What do you reckon? Should we give it a rating?
Absolutely.
I think to me this is a 7 out of 10 story. Out of 10. It's a good story. I just don't know if it gave me enough surprise for me to push it up higher.
Yep. And I can imagine this is an interesting story to tell at the pub or, you know, over a dinner conversation. It's a bit complex to make the point. I'm probably not going to use this a huge amount in a business context, so I'm actually going to give it a 6.
Yeah, right. You know, the thing that also interests me about the story, I suppose the thing that I found most surprising is that this didn't happen in one fell swoop. It happened from 92 to, what, 95?
95,
yep. Yeah. And so it was just this accumulation, you know, of mistake after mistake after mistake. And can you imagine the frustration or the terror that this guy was going through while he was losing more and more millions of dollars, more or less doubling every year?
Yep. Oh, so, it was increasing tenfold.
Tenfold every year,
it was 2 million to 20 million to 200 million.
Yeah.
And then it quadrupled in those last few months.
Wow. Yeah. So, I find that fascinating. You know, if I was to tell the story, I might even sort of start by asking a question to people. I said, does anyone remember the Baring Banks failure? And, you know, maybe depending on the audience, there'll be people who remembered it. And I said, how long do you reckon that took for that to happen? I don't know. If they were like me, they probably thought, oh, well, it'll probably happen in a couple of months. You know, where he made the one big trade and it just went under. You know, that was the impression I had. So, yeah, it's a good one. Terrific. Okay. Well, that's our story for the week, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you, at least, the great thing about hearing stories, even stories that we don't rate at 8s and 9s, is it sometimes it just helps you to trigger your own stories, right? Or to remember things like, you know, I remember the Sam Bankman-Fried story, you know, things just pop into your mind as you hear a story like that. Of course, you've got to jot them down. If you don't jot them down, they go in one ear and out the other. So, really important to do that. So I think that's it. Mark, do you got anything else we need to say at this moment? We're all good?
We're all good. We're back on track.
Fantastic.
Stay tuned for another podcast episode next Tuesday.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, thanks definitely for listening in, guys, to Anecdotic Speaking. And, of course, tune in next week for another episode of How to Put Your Stories to Work. Bye for now.
Anecdotally Speaking was engineered by Dave Stokes from Author to Audio.